Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The 2016 Milwaukee Film Festival is underway through October 6th, and we'll hear all about it this hour. There's a special emphasis during our conversation on the Black Lens Program, which features work from emerging and established African-American filmmakers. We'll talk about the stories and the topics rooted in the Black community and relevant to all, featuring fiction and documentary films. Many of them sound just really, really interesting. We'll have two guests with us, one talking about the Black Lens programming, and the second we'll talk about the overall film festival, which is now in its eighth year in Milwaukee, and it's a huge success. Hour two of our show, there is news today concerning Wells Fargo Bank executives. You'll recall that their employees had, over the course of, it may be as back as far as 2009, opened as many as 2 million phony bank and credit card accounts not authorized by customers. The customers wound up paying late fees and other kinds of fees for accounts that they had never asked for. So there were 5,300 employees fired. There was a big grilling by the Senate Banking Committee and Senator Elizabeth Warren of the CEO of Wells Fargo last week, and it looks as though it's resulted in his having to give up some of his millions. So that will be on the table, hour two of our show. Film Festival first hour, and we're welcoming phone calls. Our guest is Gerard Blanks. He is co-programmer of the Black Lens program at the Milwaukee Film Festival. He's also a domestic violence victims advocate for Sojourner Family Peace Center, a music promoter, and a former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel contributor. Welcoming phone calls about the festival at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We always love to hear your thoughts and comments. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. So there we go. Gerard, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
How you doing?
Well, this has turned into a huge festival, hasn't it? And Black Lens is a very important part of the festival.
Yeah. Black Lens, although it's only in its third year, has become, I think, a vital cog in the wheel that this enormous machine that is now the festival. I mean, this...
It's big.
Festival, sorry, I'm sorry.
No, I just said it's big. It's a big festival.
Yeah, I don't think people realize it. You know, it's funny, Milwaukee sometimes, I don't always know. I talk to people and they're like, yeah, I heard we have a festival. It's like, no, I don't think you understand. This is one of the best festivals anywhere on the planet.
And you have a number of films. Have you had a chance to see all of the films that are in the Lens program?
So what I get this question a lot, and what I smile when I tell people, I help pick them. Dante McFadden, my partner, we pick them, so we have to watch them.
Oh, that's a really hard job. I know it's a hard job
it
to
is.
Do all of it, but to pick them is hard, but to see the films must be a real thrill.
Well, you know, they're not all as great as the ones that end up in the festival, so there are some films that are a little harder to watch than others.
Yeah. Let's start with a film, just because we've had a couple wonderful interviews with her, and I'll have to tell you a story about what she did for a listener the last time she was on the air. Maya Angelou and Still I Rise, it's a personal portrait. It focuses on her, but she's telling her story in her own words, right?
Right, and that's what makes it so interesting. You know, there are a lot of different ways to do a documentary, but this one felt really personal, and I think that's why Dante and I were attracted to it, is it felt like she was sitting down telling you her life story.
And these are, is it an hour long, the documentary, a couple hours long?
Yeah, it's just under 2 hours, but it doesn't feel like it. Actually, when I was watching it, there were a couple of times where I just got stuck on certain parts, certain stories. I mean, she tells amazing stories about her life. Her life is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And so there were times where I felt like I got stuck because I wanted to keep watching this part over and over again, like the story of her hanging out with Malcolm X in Africa. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, she lived so many lives. And the story that I have about her that I've told before, she was doing a program on mothers, actually, and grandmothers, one of her books of poetry. And we were talking about that and the important role her grandmother played in her life. And a young woman called in who was getting married the weekend following our conversation with Angelou, and they were talking, and she was talking about her mother wasn't with her anymore and the importance of her grandmother. And she said to her, "Can we just put her on hold? I want to talk to her later." And so she took her address, and she wound up sending her a wedding present. Isn't that great? I love that story about her. That's so much who she is or was.
And I met Maya Angelou a long time ago when I was first in school at UWM. Dante and I, Dante McFadden, we were a part of a student group who brought her to campus.
Oh.
And so that was the first time I met her. I got to meet her backstage, and then I got to be, I got to introduce her, and then I got to walk her to her car, and she just gave one of the most inspiring speeches I've ever heard. So I've been a fan for a long time. Mm-hmm. So when we saw an opportunity to bring this film, we jumped at it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did. I hope I have a chance to see it. So how many films did you have to look at before you selected how many?
Well, Dante and I probably watched, like, from beginning to end, maybe around 30 films, but we'll sift through maybe, it could be 100 films, you know, because we have to research, we have to do research on, you know, through trade publications and, you know, websites and seeing what other festivals are doing. We research hundreds and hundreds of films. And then we narrow that down and try to find the ones we think are best suited for the program.
Mm-hmm. And are you using any of the Black Lens films? I know that there's an outreach program to go to some schools in the area so young people can see portions of films. Is that the case for any of the Black Lens films?
Absolutely. So this year we had a film called Can You Dig This? And what we did, we actually did our first sort of student outreach event, and we called it like a teen night out. And so what we did is we really pushed it to not just schools but to local agencies, and we had, and what's amazing is we had a few people, Corey Nettles, as well as Laura Heiler, and her husband donated tickets. So we had a couple of individuals donate, like, I think total of 150 tickets that we gave out to students and local agencies. And I think we had maybe around 400 people attend the event.
Ooh. And this is a story about four gardeners in a concrete urban landscape in L.A., right?
Yeah, and it's been one of our most popular films. We had a panel we wrapped around it. But it's, I don't want to keep using the word inspiring. I got to come up with a different word. But it is one of those films that you leave feeling like, you know, if you've never thought about gardening before, you're going to want to go somewhere and plant something.
Is that what you did, Gerard? Have you planted something?
I haven't had time. I haven't had time to plant anything. But as soon as the festival's over, I'm going to plant a tomato or a cucumber or something.
Yes, and these are little movements that are happening. And what you said about that, I wonder why it's so true. I think it's particularly true of film and maybe theater as well, that you can be so inspired. You can leave a theater just walking on clouds, or you can get ready to take action on some issue. Why is film so powerful in that regard?
Because it takes you to a world. For those for those 2 hours, you can become whoever you want. You can see the world in ways that you've never seen it before, and you can dream. And so much of our lives is taken up by work and stress and family concerns, and the movies allow you to dream. And when people feel like they can dream, you know, it's freedom. That's what it is. And so you leave a film feeling like there's this whole other world out there that you haven't gotten a chance to experience. And that filmmaker took you to that world for those 2 hours. And that's why we love it. And it's a part of our culture. Everybody's first date is probably at the movies.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? This one sounded interesting, as I'm recently returned from a family wedding in Brooklyn where we took a couple Ubers, mostly cabs, but some Ubers. Nine rides, this unnamed Uber driver who's checking in for the busiest day of the year, New Year's Eve, and what he witnesses during the course of the evening. Doesn't that sound like a really interesting film?
I actually talked to a group after the film. It was two couples. And the two gentlemen were both Uber drivers. So they were, it was really interesting. They were sort of taking me through their experiences. And they were like, a lot of that stuff in the movie rang true. So it was interesting having this talk with these two gentlemen. I believe they were retired, but they still, you know, drove as Uber drivers, talking about this film. They almost were talking about it like it was a documentary. That's what was so fascinating about it. And, you know, a lot of the talk has been that the film was shot on the iPhone 6, which is, you know, kind of a big deal. But forget that. The storyline to this film is unbelievable, you know. And what the director and his crew were able to do in essentially, I think it was a two-week shoot, it's just amazing. And again, I'm going to go back to the word inspiring. It makes me question why I have not made a film yet.
Oh, well, maybe you need to, huh?
Yeah. After the festival. Everything happens after
right.
the festival.
The garden, the film, all of it. And it's shot on an iPhone 6. Really? You can make a movie on an iPhone 6?
Yeah, well, you know, Tangerine, a film that came out, I think, about a year or so ago, that got a lot of acclaim. And then and that was sort of, I don't know if that was the first film, but that was the first film that I think really got a lot of notoriety because it was shot on, I think, maybe an iPhone 4 or 5. You know, they make new iPhones every 10 minutes. But it was sort of an accident that the director couldn't get access to the camera he needed, and he had to begin shooting. So, he reached in his pocket and made a film.
Hmm. The other one that sounds fascinating to me, because it's such an important time in American history, Two Trains Running, the summer of 1964.
Yeah, so Two Trains Running has been sort of a phenomenon for us. We've sold out, I think, almost every screening.
Wow.
And people can still come, but we've sold out thus far all the tickets. But it's I think what it does for people, because it's not just the storyline, right, of blues and folk music and that intersection with the civil rights movement. But it's the way that it was made. I mean, this film, when you look at it visually, it's stunning. It has animation throughout. The narration is done by a rap artist named Common, who I think a lot of people know from winning an Academy Award for the title song for Selma. It's just sort of a majestic movie, you know, from the music. I mean, it has amazing blues artists to the visuals. It's just a stunning movie. And I know some people that went in as skeptics because they were like, oh, another civil rights movie, or, oh, I don't like the blues. And they came out crying. So
it's sold out, but we'll talk to Jonathan about this, but there are still ways in case some people don't show up for a screening that you can get in, right?
Absolutely. And Jonathan is definitely the person to talk to, because he will sort of explain exactly how it works. Some people have had, you know, sometimes we have trouble explaining that even though a film is sold out, there's still an opportunity to get seats, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. Was there any, I don't know if they were going to the same place, the people who were going down to discover the whereabouts of a couple blues musicians, more than that, there were also the college students who came into Mississippi to register people to vote. It was a violent summer. It was an important summer in terms of what happened next, but quite violent. Do those two stories intersect in this film?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what's kind of cool about it. So you're talking about the three civil rights workers.
Yes.
Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman,
mm-hmm.
right? And they disappear in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Now, part of the reason this era is called Freedom Summer is because you have so much going on in terms of the mass amounts. This is like mass migration of civil rights activists, college students, volunteers to the South. You have the Freedom Riders. You have Fannie Lou Hamer and the Mississippi Freedom, Democratic Freedom Party. You have all of this going on at the same time during this one summer. Not only that, but then the movie tells this amazing story of two groups, two completely separate groups of college students who take a trip down south to find two legendary blues acts that have disappeared. So you can't make this up. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So these two groups of college students going to find two different musicians end up in Mississippi during Freedom Summer. I mean, it's amazing. So there's these different stories going on, you know, and in the midst of all that, we get a history lesson on the blues and mm-hmm. folk music and how essential it was to the movement, you know. So it's just an amazing piece of work.
Oh, I got to see it. Gerard Blanks is our guest, the first part of the show. He's co-programmer of the Black Lens program at the Milwaukee Film Festival, and they're going to be showing a number of wonderful films. You've heard him say that he went through many films before selecting the ones that are appearing, and each and every one sounds like a film that you would want to see. We're welcoming phone calls during the hour. The number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and we always receive your messages on Facebook, thankfully, and that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, phone calls. Jean, our first caller for you in Wauwatosa. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for the program. I wish I could get some of my students over to see the land because they read it with their 8th grade ELA teacher, and it'd be fascinating to compare the two.
Hmm. Gerard.
Unfortunately, the last screening of The Land was Monday. So that film isn't screening anymore, unfortunately.
Will we be able to see any of the films once the festival is over? If she wanted her students to see The Land, is there a way to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Land actually was in limited release, so it was out in theaters. I believe it, if it's not going to be on demand, maybe in the next couple of weeks, very soon. Almost all of the movies that we feature are films that are going to be eventually on iTunes, on demand, on Netflix. So they're definitely accessible. And, you know, if anybody contacted me, we would definitely get information from the director or the producer on exactly where these films can be seen.
Oh, good.
Sweet.
So,
yeah.
Thanks, Gene. So how do people get a hold of you?
So people can get a hold of me at my email. I had to stop giving out my cell phone number, so I strictly do email now.
Okay.
It is Gerard, G-E-R-A-U-D, at mkefilm.org.
mkefilm.org. So has it reached the point, do you now get people who could be selected for the Black Lens part of this program? Are you getting lots of films during the course of the year, Gerard, saying, oh, you need to see this film and we want to be in the film festival? How does that work?
So what happens is we get a mix of submissions from directors and producers, as well as Dante and I just go hunt down the films. That's a big part of it, to be honest, because our film festival is later in the season. So a lot of the major festivals have already happened. And so what Dante and I try to do is we try to make Black Lens sort of a best of. We want to know what's hot, what are people talking about, which films are winning awards. And then those are the ones that we really look at closely, as well as some more obscure films. But this year, there were so many good films that people were talking about online and at the different festivals that we were really, I mean, this was a blessing this year, I have to be honest with you. A film like The Land, we didn't know if we could get it because it did have a theatrical release, but lucky enough, we pushed hard enough, and Jonathan Jackson, he deserves a lot of the credit because he will call people 10, 20 times, and we'll get no's, but we'll keep pushing to try and get us a film.
Mm. And why is a Black Lens segment, a number of films in the Black Lens category, important to this festival, important to the city, important to the country?
Well, one, I think people don't understand the diversity of images and the diversity of films that are being made by Black filmmakers. For instance, we have a couple of rom-coms that we're really excited about because, and they're not just rom-coms in the traditional sense, you know, they're also very, they're dramatic films as well, but showing black love, black sexuality, is something you don't see enough of. We try to steer away. Dante and I don't want to just show black suffering. We don't want to just show movies about the struggle. That's important, but like with the Two Trains Running, that wasn't just a movie about civil rights. That was a movie about the celebration of black artistry. And we want to make sure we have a balanced approach to showing the black experience and to highlighting the work from black directors, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is not specifically part of Black Lens, but it's an important film for Milwaukee. Pat sends this email. I just wanted to say thank you for all of the work you're doing. I've been to the festival for 3 years, and I've seen some really great films. The festival is so good that John Axford, a former Brewers pitcher, is still donating to the fest. I admire the films you have, like 53206. I really see some good films that are addressing the issues going on in Milwaukee right now.
Yeah, so here's what we say. When we hear that from people, get out the word. Because, you know, thousands and thousands of people come to our festival over the 2 weeks that it's held. But Milwaukee, you know, what do we have, about 500,000 people? You know, a population of 500,000, close to 1 million in the county. There are still so many people that are not engaged, and we need to get everyone engaged. I mean, and then Jonathan will speak to this. We want the film festival to be Summerfest. You know, we want it to be the thing that everybody looks forward to at the beginning of fall every year. You know, you're plotting out, you know, what shows you're going to go to. You're taking time off work. You know, that's where we want to get the festival to. So when I hear people compliment the work we're doing, I'm always saying, well, tell a friend and have them tell a friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's growing, isn't it? There are more and more people coming to this.
It's actually going a little too fast.
Is it?
It's going a little too fast. But we still have, I mean, it's only in year 8, and we're really considered a baby compared to some of the big-name festivals that have been around 30-plus years. So we're growing at an amazing rate. But, you know, I'm always thinking about, well, what can we do better? What do we need to do more of, you know? So,
mm-hmm. I know the Black Lens program was one of only 16 programs in the whole world to receive a $10,000 Film Watch grant from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. That's a big deal. What are you going to do with the dough?
Well, it's already gone. I mean,
it's gone. Where did it go?
It's a festival. I mean, you know, hey, look, it takes so much to run this festival, from the people to, you know, we have so many guests. I don't know that people realize we have hundreds of guests. I mean, people we fly in from around the country, around the world. It is extremely expensive to put on a festival because you can't just say, hey, we want to show your movie, and then people send you a copy of it and you play it. you have to pay to show it. You know, it costs money to bring people in. But that $10,000, what that does, like Black Lens, we had a guest for I think almost every film we've shown. That's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And so that $10,000 goes directly to bringing those guests in, making sure they have a wonderful time, because we have the best guest relations team anywhere. I mean, I've been to a lot of festivals, and nobody treats guests like we do, but that's expensive. So the Academy, their money went to a good use, you know, like Sam Pollard for Two Trains Running is going to be in town. So.
Wonderful. That's great. So what's your film going to be about, Gerard?
Oh, I can't tell you.
Because you don't know, or it's a secret?
I have an idea about dealing with, I want to write a film about about a typical relationships between 30-something young black men and women. But I want to, you know, I want to write it from the standpoint of my understanding and my experiences. And, you know, there's a lot of films that have influenced me over the years, and one day I'm going to get it done.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you if I'm still alive. No. Maybe I will be. Gerard, thank you so much. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Gerard Blanks, he's co-programmer of the Black Lens Program at the Milwaukee Film Festival, also a domestic violence victims advocate for Sojourner Family Peace Center, music promoter, and former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel contributor. Jonathan Jackson is here to give us more of an overview of the entire festival, which includes over 300 films. He's the artistic and executive director of the Milwaukee Film Festival and has been ever since it started. He's been active in the arts community in Milwaukee for many, many years, serving on committees and boards of directors at the Milwaukee Art Museum, Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, Milwaukee Artist Resource Network. He also has been a film professor and maybe still is, we'll ask him, at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And thank you so much, Jonathan, for being with us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Yeah, so this really has, Gerard was talking about how he wants this to be like Summerfest and people will mark and take time off work and look to the early fall as the time where you just go to the Milwaukee Film Festival. It is, maybe it's not quite at that point yet, mm-hmm. but it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, isn't it?
That's absolutely our goal. Nothing makes me happier than hearing people talk about how they schedule their lives around the festival. And to me, that's victory. To me, that means that people are taking us seriously. And I mean, I get the complaint from my wife all the time. She said it to me again this morning. She says, there's too much. There's too much to see. There's too much to do. And, you know, that's when I know we're doing something successful, when people want to experience the, you know, in addition to the 300 films, there's literally 500 different events you can attend.
Wow, really?
500 different single events that you can attend during the film festival itself, whether it's a party, a conversation, a panel, a film screening. There's so many different things going on. And we just couldn't be happier to integrate into the community the way we do.
So Gerard was talking about the number of films that he watched before deciding which ones were going to be a part of the festival. How many have you seen?
I don't keep track. I've been to multiple film festivals. You know, the programming process for the film festival is intense and changes a little bit every year. There's more and more that we can see now online, on demand. So film festival programmers, we literally used to have to travel to every film festival under the sun to go see and consider movies for the film festival. You know, now there are private screening links and people trust the services that they use. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if there's a film out there in the world we want to see, we can watch it. That also means, I mean, we're at the greatest time of cinema production in its history. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of films made every year, the majority of which never will see the light of a projector in Milwaukee. Our job is to find, you know, those 300 best that we can showcase in the 15 days of the film festival. And that's really what decides our programming is. We try to pick a best of the best selection so that Milwaukee can enjoy the best 15 days of cinema they'll find anywhere on the planet.
What films have really, we use the word in, Gerard wanted to find another word, but it's a good word, to be inspired by a film, to walk out of a film and say, oh, I didn't know very much about this. It's changed the way I perceive things in a substantial way. It's made me want to take action on some kind of issue. What has inspired you, who's seen hundreds of these films?
Well, one is that just that general feeling. And I even love it just walking out of a cinema. And the world just seems a little bit more alive when you've seen something that deeply touches you, that moves you, that artistically the sensibility or the aesthetic value of it just transports you. And I look for that to happen almost every day in my life because movies are part of my everyday life. But, you know, one movie in particular, I can't wait till our centerpiece screening this Saturday night, Almost Sunrise, a movie that is, you know, a story rooted in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, about the Veterans Trek movement, and about two veterans who walked across the country to sort of recuperate their soul and at the same time raise awareness for veterans in this country and their plight and perhaps also misdiagnoses on a mass scale that are happening in this country. And the movie takes a very hard personal subject matter and turns it into an incredibly uplifting, positive emotional journey. And we've worked really hard to ensure that there are a lot of veterans groups that have been offered free tickets. Excellent. And so at the screening itself, in addition to the festival audience, the donors and supporters who will go to a premium centerpiece screening, there's also going to be a lot of people working in the veterans community and veterans themselves there. And that's the core of the festival to me, is you have a communal viewing experience. Mm-hmm. With a really diverse set of people from different experiences, and they connect to the cinema itself. And so we just can't wait for Centerpiece. All the film subjects will be here. The filmmakers, it's even Michael Collins, the filmmaker for the movie. It's his 40th birthday that night.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So we're very much hoping to have the whole audience sing him happy birthday together, among other activities that we'll be doing. And then Sunday, the following day, we'll screen the movie again, and we're also going to do a panel. And it's going to look at, you know, in Milwaukee, what are the groups, what are the organizations that are working on veterans affairs? And it's a panel called Coming Home, Embracing Veterans and Understanding Moral Injury. And that's really the heart of the movie, is this concept of moral injury and whether or not that's more what veterans are suffering from as opposed to PTSD. And if it is moral injury, there's a very different type of treatment that you would do for that concept as opposed to PTSD. So, you know, to have a movie, to screen it, that on its core, it's a movie, it's entertaining, it's enlightening. But then to have the subjects here, to then do some substantive build-out education forum around it, that to me is the epitome of what we're trying to do at the Milwaukee Film Festival.
Yeah, it just makes it so important, doesn't it? You see the film, but you do more than see the film. The people who have experienced it or are taking action are there, and they're inspired to carry forth. I really do want to see that. We had them in the studio before they left on the trip. I didn't even know a film was being made about them. We just found them somehow, and they were so inspirational and down to earth, and I knew what they were going to do. But now to see the movie about that, it will be terrific. And to think that you're doing that to coordinate all of this, because it's not the only film you're doing this for. You've got other films, right, that have community involvement, and you're bringing the directors in. And what a huge thing to organize this.
Well, I think so highly of our team. You know, you spoke to Gerard, who balances a day job, advanced schooling, and, you know, an unbelievable passion for working for this organization and for presenting the Black Lens program. We basically have, you know, 100 people like him who now work for Milwaukee Film, some seasonally, where they come in to execute the festival itself or come in a few months in advance. But we also have a 15-person team that now works year-round on principally these 15 days. And there's so much more, as you said, than just the movie screenings. There's all the guests that come in. There's the great education screenings program we do, where nearly 9,000 students from predominantly MPS.
9,000.
9,000. If you drive around the corner of North and Farwell Avenue around 10 a.m., you'll see about 30 buses and 1,000 students a day go to a private school group screening of one of the movies in the festival. And we work with teachers to create educational curriculum so that the subject matter of the movie can be brought into the classroom after the screening. And what's exciting about it also is just that, you know, you'll have classes of 100 or 50 or 200 from various different schools throughout Milwaukee participate in the same screening together. And how often do those students from those different schools cross paths? And one of the illuminating pieces of the program is when you have the question and answer session after the movie, and students hear students from other schools ask a question and relate to the movie in a specific way that's very different from how they actually react to it. But teachers rave about that program. You know, yesterday I was in Milwaukee High School of the Arts with one of the actors from the Black Lens program, Charles Bryce, who was talking to their theater students about, you know, what it was like to premiere his film at Sundance this year and what advice he has for them about making it, you know, in the business as an actor. And those types of experiences students in high school would never have if not for the film festival. And it, you know, gives you a little spirit and uplift when you're not sleeping for 15 days.
Oh, what sleep? You know the saying, you can do that when you're no longer on Earth. Mary is wanting to talk to you from Milwaukee. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I'm just wondering if there are any environmental documentaries this year. And because I'm a working person and I can't get to 15 days worth of movies, how does a person go about seeing one of these if you can't get to the viewing of, you know, where you have it?
Excellent questions. You know, in terms of the second part of the question, there are movies that will, you know, the majority of the movies won't be shown in a cinema in Milwaukee after the festival. A few will, like Queen of Katwe, for instance. But we try to track them. We have a newsletter that you can sign up for, mkefilm.org. That's on our website. You sign up for our newsletter, and every week we spotlight a film that previously screened in the Milwaukee Film Festival and that can be found currently on demand. Mm. We're looking at creating a page on our website in the future where we track all past movies and can identify quickly for people where they are available. But a lot of it is, you know, they will come out, but it'll take, you know, a couple of months or a year or more for them to be available. You know, I would say that a few of the movies are actually available on demand now. And what's interesting is that we used to think that that would be a deterrent to audience going to see it, but it almost helps increase the attendance at the screenings now. And we think it's just because it has more awareness. But what we prioritize is that communal viewing experience where, you know, you yourself are watching the movie, but you interact to it in a communal way afterwards, hopefully not during the screening, but afterwards with the audience in the cinema, you know, talk about it to the people in line. And that communal experience is what we prioritize. In terms of environmental films, there's a number of films that touch on different environmental issues. One film, you know, in the Black Lens program, Can You Dig This?, is one that does talk about gardening and community gardening revolution. A film, Death by a Thousand Cuts, the filmmaker for it, Juan, was in town yesterday for his screening of it. He had to go now, but there's still one more screening of it. And that's a film that looks at the tension between Haiti and the Dominican Republic and deforestation there. I think that's a really sharp, very volatile film, but is actually gorgeously filmed as well, and is about an issue that I had never known about prior to having seen the film. And, you know, in terms of other environmental films, there's this film, From Mass to the Mountain, that's actually part of our great Cream City Cinema program, which I love this program. It's core to the festival. It's about the makers who live in the 7-county region of Milwaukee, the M7 region. And it's not necessarily the film is made here. The films are made actually throughout the world, and it's global in its nature. But it's about those filmmakers and directors who live here year-round and are artists who choose to stay in this community, but are, in fact, global storytellers. From Mass to the Mountain is in Panama, and it's about a priest who is originally from Ripon, Wisconsin, who's lived there for about 30 years and is trying to rebuild a watershed to give the town clean drinking water. Huh. And it's a fascinating look at this perspective. And, you know, there are absolutely people on both sides of this issue, whether it's a positive or a negative. But in his case, as from the film's perspective, you know, he's doing this great service working with the community itself to build up this clean water reservoir so that the town, you know, doesn't go through the medical conditions it's going through because of its contaminated water supply. Those are just a couple of the environmental movies that jump out to me.
Yeah, those sound fascinating. And you did say, I bet you learn a lot, because I think through sound and through film and through radio, I think it's true as well, you can learn a lot. You can learn, maybe take it in and hold it a little bit longer than you can through other forms of communication. And I'll bet you've learned a lot about all kinds of subjects from putting this together, haven't you?
As long as the films don't blur together, which right. can happen every once in a while right. when you're at a festival. But that's at the core of why I love movies. You know, in the span of an hour and a half, you can be introduced to a whole new worldview, a whole new subject matter, whether it's a documentary or a fiction film. You know, a documentary can sometimes be a more straightforward approach to learning. But to me, you know, our Worldviews program, which is our fiction film program, there's 18 films in it. They're all set in a different place in the world. And they all share a new perspective on life that you hadn't seen before. And I find that experience of being immersed in another culture, learning about another people, just gives you a fresh new perspective on what, you know, what living in a different part of the world might be, to maybe sometimes tell you, hey, maybe it isn't so bad where we have it here, or maybe this isn't necessarily the way I should be thinking about daily life. I'd point to a film like Lamb, which is this incredibly tender Ethiopian drama. And, you know, frankly, there aren't a ton of strong Ethiopian films that have been made over the last decade or more. And this is, I think, one of the smarter and also just more tender films in the festival. And it's principally a countryside look at a boy's relationship to this lamb who he had to take care of. And you follow them as they sort of traverse the countryside. And it's a beautiful look at their relationship and this region in Ethiopia that isn't necessarily what you would expect from what you read in the headlines.
Oh, is that yet to be shown?
There are two more screenings of that in the festival.
All right. We're welcoming more phone calls if you'd like to join the conversation or just listen and get information about the Milwaukee Film Festival underway until October 6th. And we're happy to have the artistic and executive director of the Milwaukee Film Festival, Jonathan Jackson, who's been in that title ever since it started 8 years ago. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to more phone calls for you, Jonathan. Many are coming in. You asked me, though, to ask you, if there's anything you want to be sure and highlight in our short period of time together, and you said that there was, and so
absolutely.
What is it?
Well, I would just encourage people to check out our newest program this year. It's called United States of Cinema. Principally, we've focused in the past on screening documentary films and international fiction films, and we have a new program this year highlighting the best of American independent cinema. And what's exciting about the program and why we titled it United States of Cinema is that it puts a focus on, you know, you'll find a lot of independent films made about New York City and L.A. and 20-something white kids. And this is a story that really, a program that really showcases the diversity of experiences in the U.S. There's a lot of immigrant stories. There's, you know, Minnesota set. There's San Francisco set. And a lot of the filmmakers and the actors are going to be here. Every single film has representation from cast or crew. And to me, that's the heart of the festival experience. Again, when you have the director of the film here, you have the stars of it here.
Right.
And some of them aren't people you've heard about before, but some are. Like in the case of Operator, which from Freaks and Geeks fame for me, Martin Starr, who's also on Silicon Valley now, Mae Whitman, who has been on Arrested Development, are both going to be here with this tender sort of love story about a data-obsessed computer programmer. That's going to be this Saturday, and two of the bigger guests we're going to have for the film festival. Also, this film, Astray, that we have and screens tonight, Thursday night, next Tuesday. This is a film about a young Somali Muslim refugee in Minneapolis who develops this relationship with a stray dog. And the two characters bond tremendously, and this will be the one canine guest that we'll be featuring this
year. Oh, the dog is coming. Oh, you'll have a big audience.
The dog is coming, as well as Barkhad, the star who plays the Somali, and he was the star in Captain Phillips. And so both of them will be here for the screenings, and will just be an exciting opportunity to get to know the actors and directors and see their perspective on the program. But just really urge people to check out United States of Cinema.
Okay. Fred in Racine, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? I love the show.
Good, Fred.
I just wanted to call. I mean, I love the film festival, especially the events that are at the beautiful historic Oriental Theater. Love the place. I guess my only question is, the Oriental Theater is also known for having the longest showing of Rocky Horror Picture Show in the world. Would the film festival ever think of doing anything with them and maybe bringing in some of the stars from the Rocky Horror Picture Show or making an event along with that cast?
It's a fun idea. We actually have not talked to them about that. We do love showing classic films. One of my favorite classics that we do in the festival and that we started about 4 years ago is that on Saturday night, 10 p.m. this year, this Saturday, we'll do Stop Making Sense, which is, to me, the greatest concert film ever made. It's The Talking Heads, and it's a film that concert film that Jonathan Demme shot. And what's so exciting is it sold out last year, and you end up having a 600-person dance party in that glorious Oriental Theater.
Oh, nice.
Literally dancing live to the movie. And I don't know anywhere else in the world that happens. And to me, that's event cinema at its finest, and analogous to the Rocky Horror Picture Show experience. So I think it's a good idea. We should definitely explore it.
Thank you for the call. And people are going to be listening wondering, how do I get a list of films at this point? How do you do it?
Best way, mkefilm.org. That is our website. And all the information is updated on there, including which films are selling quickly, which are on rush, which is analogous to sold out. You can also pick up program books at any of the venues for the festival.
All right. Deborah in Brown Deer, hi.
Hi. I've actually seen Talking Heads in concert when I lived in Dallas, but I just wanted
I'm jealous.
To tell you, when you mentioned the 30 buses going to the screenings, I just pictured in my mind a documentary of that whole event, and I just wanted to suggest that.
That's an awesome idea. We do know a lot of great, great local filmmakers, and that would be an exciting experience to track the students' experience of going through the education screenings program.
Mm-hmm. Sure would. Maybe some of the students could do that. Next week, we're going to have, and I thought her story was remarkable. I can't remember because we do so many shows when she was last with us, but the former beauty queen who went to Afghanistan, who is the country's only lawyer whose husband was killed. You know, you would think that she'd be facing danger, but her husband's killed here in Milwaukee.
Shot, not killed.
Oh, shot. I'm sorry. He was shot. You're right.
He actually came to the office today, so I know for sure.
I'm sorry, yeah. I'm thinking of other incidents that have taken place in the country. Her story is amazing, and somebody did a film about her. I didn't even know somebody was doing a film about her. She's going to be with us next week.
Absolutely, and she'll be at the festival for the screening of Motley's Law Wednesday, October 5th. And what's crazy coincidence, on Friday, October 7th, she'll be receiving an alumni award from UWM. So it's an incredible timing and opportunity, and a bit of sort of backstory on the festival. This was the single hardest film for us to secure for the festival this year. It took months, literally months, to secure it, and we desperately wanted it in the festival. It got caught in a rights issue because the film was actually purchased for American distribution by Al Jazeera America. And when Al Jazeera America shut down, their rights could not be cleared to screen anywhere anymore. And so we had to trace back and go through different countries because the film is actually a Danish film. It was made by a Danish filmmaker that did the story. And we had to trace back the rights all the way to the original producers and get contract clearance. But we were able to pull it together. We're so excited to spotlight Kimberly Motley, an extraordinary story of, you know, she's not just the only American lawyer. She is the only lawyer outside of Afghanistan that is allowed to practice law there. And she has become, you know, a social justice advocate. And it's an uncanny look at what life is like in Afghanistan today. And it's sort of through the prism of her experience in, you know, having been from the U.S., but experiencing what Afghanistan is like.
Yeah, phenomenal story. Well, Jonathan, I know you're having a rip-roaring good time with all of this, and you'll get sleep in maybe about a week. You can sleep in. And thank you so much. Give us the website once again for a listing of films.
mkefilm.org.
Thank you. Jonathan Jackson, Artistic Executive Director of the Milwaukee Film Festival, has been for the past 8 years. We thank him so much for bringing this to this fair city. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. News coming up. We'll talk about the Wells Fargo continuing saga and scandal following the latest news.